listening. Thank you for downloading. And don't forget to subscribe to iTunes. Today, tonight, wherever you're listening around the world, we have three of our regulars. Tony, how are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
That's away. Carl, how are you, buddy?
Very good, thank you very much.
Very good. 3 points, mate, makes a smile, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How are you, Savvy?
Yeah, very good. Doing very well.
That's away. Arsenal v Bournemouth. Tony, let's get straight into it. I heard your comments on the earlier podcast you did today. Anything to add on that, mate?
I've watched it back since, and I pretty much agree with everything I said, which is quite unusual, because usually you have your after-the-game thoughts, and then you watch it back, and you your opinion slightly changes because you see some things differently. The only thing I would say, and it was one of the first posts I'd done when I was on Clock End Talk, is people not watching games, just listening to commentators and forming their opinion off that.
Yep.
Because I've been reading this morning that Sanchez was amazing when he came on, and I thought,
he looked bad. He looked good.
He's bad, but he didn't. I don't think he made a difference. I don't think it was like, wow, this guy's on the pitch, the whole game's different.
When he came on, and on TV, he looked good to me. I overheard you're talking about he looked heavy. I tend to agree a little bit there. I don't know what it is. It's not overweight, like you said, but he does look heavier. I don't understand how, though, but I do see what you're saying there. He did look good. Carl, what your thoughts on it, mate?
I think it was a very good game. Everyone played their part very well. Wenger clearly got his tactics right, also known as playing people in their right positions. But on to the Sanchez point. Yeah, I agree. He seemed a bit heavy coming onto the pitch. He didn't really set the world alight, to be honest. I don't know if it's his mental state or, as Tony said, the physical side of it. But he doesn't seem ready to come back, in my opinion.
A little bit, what, another week off on the sideline, you reckon? Or
at least, yep.
Mm. What do you take of the match, Savvy?
Yeah, I think we bounced back very convincingly after that Liverpool game. Tactically, I think everything was spot on. The players playing wherever they were playing, they all did their jobs very convincingly. So it was a good game. And on Sanchez, yeah, I think the way I saw, I think he looked good. But yeah, as Tony mentioned, he certainly looks heavy. I think he will be rested for the Europa League game and will be back starting against Chelsea. I hope so. He starts. Let's see.
Tony, you were at the stadium, mate. What was the reception like for Sanchez when he come on?
There was a few boos. Where I was, I mean, I sit right behind the dugout, and it was over exaggerated cheers. It was like the guy had just saved someone's mum's life or something. How loud people were cheering around there. I mean, I heard a couple of boos, but not much. But then I spoke to my mate who sits in the corner behind the goal we were shooting in the second half. And he said there was quite a lot of boos around him. So it depends where you were in the stadium. But, it was mainly cheering. There was muted boos, but then there was also over-the-top cheering as well. So I think there was a bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now on the TV from where I was, I could hear a few little boos and lots of cheering, like you said. Who was your man of the match? You, I think you said Welbeck earlier in your podcast, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, he worked his nuts off. He got back as well as going forward. He scored 2 goals and got an assist out of the 3. I think it's very hard to not give someone that performs like that man of the match. I don't think he really put a foot wrong. I can't remember anything glaringly obvious. Also, his hold-up play was a lot better than normal. Like, there was a few times the ball got zipped into him and he actually took a touch and held it up rather than taking a touch and chasing it 20 yards. So I think you've pretty much got to give it to him. I don't think anyone was bad. I actually thought Hector had his best game in ages. I thought everyone was pretty good. But, I thought Welbeck, when you finish a game with 2 goals and assist out of 3, you kind of have to get man of the match.
Yeah, you got to get it by default. We ran a poll and the poll was, I haven't got the stats on me at the moment, but it was Welbeck well in front. Carl, you agree?
Yeah, Welbeck had a very good game against Bournemouth. Also, I'd highlight the performances of Ozil, Ramsey, perhaps Xhaka. But in general, the whole team, they played their roles. even Mustafi, he looked a little bit more composed. He had a few clumsy clearances and stuff, but he seemed a lot more composed than what he was against, you know, in the last match against Liverpool. Not even Liverpool, Stoke, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. He looked like he was enjoying the football over here with the commentators were talking about, you know, he wanted to go to Inter. And the commentator mentioned it a few times. And he said, oh, he wanted to go to Inter in the summer. And now, you know, Wenger's just got to say, well, suck it up, sunshine. You're not going. You're here, so you do your best. But I watched him, and he looked like he was really enjoying his football.
I think, yeah. I mean, just to slightly interrupt on that, he played in the middle of the three, which I actually think suits him more. He wants to be a ball-playing centre-back, but in reality, he's a lot better at just a strong challenge, head the ball as far as he can, kick it as far as he can, and there's no real expectations because his passing is not very good or it's too ambitious. So being in the middle of the three, actually, I think suits him better. I don't think it's where he wants to play. But I think it hides a lot of his weaknesses where you're not expecting him to come out and slide the ball into midfield. When you're in the middle of the three, you're expected to just give it to one of the other two who are usually better footballers or get it wide to the wing-backs. So I think being in the middle of the three actually suits him. Whether that's long-term remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Savvy Bellerin, he definitely played better on the right wing-back than the left. What was your thoughts on Bellerin?
I think he had a great game. He was brilliant going forward, and he was supporting Koscielny too, which he didn't do in the last few games. I think he had a great game. The old Hector looks he's back. So, yeah, it was great to see him playing well.
Tony, you mentioned in your pod that Klozinac... He was, I'll get that name by the end of the season. You mentioned he was looking tired on the field. I didn't see it on the TV, but what was it, about the 60th minute or something, was it?
No, just every time, I mean, probably from about the 60th, 70th minute, every time sort of he was off the ball or the ball went dead, he was literally like hands on knees, like he was trying to find a new way of getting oxygen into his body. He's done it before. He'd done it in pre-season in one game in China, I think it was against Chelsea. He went off after 40 minutes because he literally couldn't move anymore. That can kind of be forgiven. It was a quick turnaround, the temperature, the humidity. And then the same in the Emirates Cup, the game we won 5, whatever it was, Benfica. He came off after about 60 or 70 then and he played really well. But again, he was knackered. Mm. And it was similar. It was very similar yesterday. I said just every time he was actually on his haunches every time he was off the ball. It's one of them things that it's never going to be in camera shot because he'd done it off the ball. It's not like the ball was coming to him and he was sort of on his hands and knees.
Yeah.
But it was a few times when we won set pieces and like literally as soon as the ball was dead, he was like standing there literally struggling. But I think I said it in my pod, I think you can half see that someone who's as quick as he is with the size he has.
He's a big boy.
He's very unlikely to be able to do that for 90 minutes. So. Mm. I mean, he was okay yesterday because he didn't get pushed too much. But you even see in the last few minutes when they had their chances, they came down his side. Like when Cech made the quite good save at the end, it came from, first of all, Kolasinac got to the ball and couldn't make proper contact with it because I think he was too tired. And then it came back out and I beat him one-on-one. And it was the only time he'd been beat one-on-one all game. And I think that's down to fitness. And obviously it was 3-0 up. It didn't matter. But you put that at 1-0 in the 90th minute against Chelsea and it's Pedro or Hazard going at him and it's a... suddenly it becomes a lot more important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he's... and I think he's found... Look, that suits him, that position, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, he's a left wing-back. Left-back or left wing-back. It does massively suit him. I think it's just the pace. There's not as much rest in the Premier League as there is elsewhere. So maybe in Germany he could go up and down and he gets his rest when the ball's over the other side of the pitch or when the ball's off. But wherever the Premier League is, maybe the quality isn't as good, but it's much more frantic. It seems like you're sort of always running. You're very rarely standing still. And I think that's what he's not getting the recovery time he's used to.
Mm-hmm. When Sanchez comes back, where does he type of slot in? Because Welbeck, he had a brilliant game.
I wouldn't know where to fit him in, to answer that question. He, like the Coutinho situation in Liverpool before they got shafted 5-0, I don't think he could find a place in the team at the moment. With Welbeck on form, you have to keep him in the team. Mm. Otherwise, he'll lose that form very quickly. So, yeah, in response to that question, I don't think Sanchez can get in the team until the likes of Welbeck drop off.
And I think the Wenger mentioned it in the press conference that, you know, he's going to be giving Welbeck a good chunk of time this season, because he did praise him, you know, pretty well in the press conference. I don't know whether, obviously, because he got man of the match, but yeah. So I think, you know, Wenger is going to start Welbeck more often there than not, I suppose. What's your thoughts on it, Savvy?
Yeah, I think Welbeck doesn't deserve to be dropped right now, because I think, yeah, we can fault his finishing, but he has already scored 3 goals and I think assisted 1 or 2 more. So I think he's in great form. Right now, Sanchez, he doesn't look match fit. So yeah, definitely Welbeck starts ahead of Sanchez for me right now.
You, Tony?
I mean, there's only one position he can play, which is where Welbeck started yesterday. I wouldn't be surprised at Chelsea, if Sanchez is fit enough, being fit enough, I wouldn't be surprised if they put Welbeck up top and play Sanchez in where Welbeck's been playing in the same setup as the FA Cup final, yeah, and as the Community Shield, because you know Welbeck's going to do them running. He's going to push Cahill and David Luiz out wide, which they don't really want to do, whereas Lacazette more looks to get on the ball more. So he comes short and tries to play football, which he's good at, but Welbeck's a lot better at stretching the pitch. So if I wouldn't be surprised, I'm not saying I think this will happen, but it wouldn't at all surprise me if Lacazette is not in the team for Chelsea and Welbeck goes up top and Sanchez comes in his normal position.
Well, I don't watch much French league, I'll be honest. Lacazette, he does drop back a lot. Do we know? Like, what is it? Is he tired? Is he looking for a breather or something? I noticed him drifting back a lot last night. And not a negative in his game by any means, but I just did notice it, which I found it odd.
Yeah, I mean, he likes to get on the ball. I think everyone likes to have touches of the ball. It's very hard to play up front, especially on your own, when you're only having sort of 20 touches a half. It's like you get a touch every 1 or 2 minutes and it's literally one touch. It's hard. So a lot of players like to come and fill the ball. So he comes short and does that. And sometimes it works. I mean, we had the ref gave a free kick when we should have carried on playing, but he came short and linked up with Ramsey and Welbeck in some nice quick football. And I think it was Welbeck was taken out on the edge of the area and Lacazette was probably 20 yards out and was going to shoot and the ref blew up. So, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I would like to see him run channels more, especially with Sanchez and Ozil behind him, because in general, Ozil isn't going to run the channels. And Sanchez, we know, likes to come to feet rather than run the channels. So someone's got to do it, which is, I think, why towards the back end of the season, Welbeck worked quite well up top, because he was doing the running for Sanchez and Ozil. Mm-hmm. Or not the running, he was doing the ugly work that they didn't want to do. And I think Lacazette will have to adapt to do that, because there's no point making Ozil do it. You want him on the ball, not running away from it in general. And Sanchez has always done that and is never going to change. I think if one of them is going to change, Lacazette is more likely to be adaptable than Sanchez. Mm. So I think he will have to add that to his game, because at the moment, I mean, you can't argue that he's clearly a better finisher than Welbeck, but Welbeck's adding more to the game because he's running the channels, he's stretching them for pace, he's holding the ball up, he wins balls in the air. Whereas at the moment, Lacazette just adds to what we're already doing.
Yep, yep. And I tweeted out in the game last night after Welbeck's first goal, he just looks ugly. Like, that first goal, I think it come off his... Oh, it looked like he come off his chin or something. It just looks ugly. And then the next goal was beautiful. I was like, wow, what? That was unreal. And, yeah, I don't know. He's an ugly footballer, isn't he? he just is. Okay, Coughlin, have we got an injury update, Tony?
So there won't be a scan until tomorrow, usually, because the players won't come in today. They won't bring him in just to give him a scan, and usually they wait for the inflammation of the muscle to go down. Your muscle will automatically be inflamed if you play the game of football. So there will be a scan tomorrow. The news coming, I mean, obviously there's been no, they would have assessed him after the game and said, we'll scan you on Monday. The news that's kind of half leaking is that it's not too bad, just a small hamstrings tear, probably a couple of weeks. But they won't know the full extent until the scan. that news that's leaking could be rubbish. I've heard it all before. I've been at games before where it's been leaked that he's only going to be a couple of weeks and you end up with someone out for 9 months. I've seen it happen before. So I'll take that with a pinch of salt, but they don't think it's too serious. The fact that he walked off usually means it's not a really bad hamstring strain, because if your hamstring goes completely or tears, rips completely, you usually can't even walk because you can't bend it. So hopefully it's just a small tear, but we'll find out probably tomorrow. Or if Arsenal don't release it, it'll be on Wednesday in the press conference before the Europa League game.
The commentators were talking about it, that he'd ripped his shirt off and thrown it, as if to say, that's me for the season. It's not him for the season. It's not that bad injury, is it?
No, I mean, it's nowhere near that, or it doesn't look it.
It doesn't look it.
I think it's just frustrating. He's a passionate guy. He came on for, I don't know if you could hear it on TV, when he came on, they made a big thing of it being his 100th game for us, on like the stadium announcer. He had probably one of his best chances to score for us. It was a good block by Ake. He's just a passionate guy. He's finally got minutes on the pitch, first minutes of the season, pretty much. And then he goes off within sort of 10, 15 minutes. So I think it was more frustration than knowing it was a really bad injury. As I said, I think if you're out for a year with a hamstring, you ain't walking off the pitch.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of that, Carl? Coughlin, so...
I hope that...
Did you see it on the TV?
Yeah, I saw it. It was a weird one, to be honest.
It did look weird, didn't it? The way he
just looked like he just got shot out of the sky. The way he fell to the ground. But obviously, I hope Coughlin isn't out too long. It kind of... I don't know about the midfield situation now. I don't know if we're obviously going to be left a little bit short now. But then, what if this gives the opportunity for Wilshere to step in? I hope it does.
A lot of people thought Wilshere was going to step in on the weekend. He was at least going to make a bench spot, and it didn't happen.
That was probably my fault, because I heard that there was about 70% chance of him being in the squad. From what I heard, Arsenal didn't release it till the squad till late Friday night to the players. But the way it was in the way Wenger was indicating was that Jack would be involved, especially being against his old club in some kind of way in Bournemouth. I said this on Friday as well. The thought was that he would either get minutes then or probably start on Thursday, depending how strong Wenger wants to go. Mm. I'd be very surprised if he's not involved on Thursday. But obviously, I have been wrong before. So.
What about you, Sandy? Are you a Jack fan? Savvy? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm a Jack Wilshere fan, really. I love his passion and how he plays. Yeah, I would really like him to be involved in the Europa League game. And I would have loved to see Coughlin, but yeah, he's injured. So I hope he gets well soon. And I hope we see Wilshere on Thursday.
And the reason I said Sandy, because I was actually looking at the run sheet and that was my next question. My next question was to mention they're saying he's due to come back next year, Tony, 2018, early 2018 or late, we don't know.
So they've not registered him for the squad. So he's running already, but obviously he's probably got a fair bit of weight to shift because he's not the smallest of guys anyway. But he's back running. He'll probably be back kicking a ball usually in about a month. And they've not registered him for the squad until they can re-register in January, 1st of January. So he can't play until then, even if he miraculously became fit tomorrow, he can't play until January.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a case of, I think he will be ready before then, but they didn't want to waste a number like in the squad when he couldn't play, like when they knew he wasn't going to be available till December, you're wasting a number for 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
So he may be back before January in terms of fitness wise, but he can't play till January regardless.
Yeah, okay. Carl, did you see the obviously everyone's seen it, transfer window closing, start of the season. What's your thoughts, mate?
I think it's a very good thing for the Premier League. I think the whole transfer saga surrounding Alexis Sanchez to Manchester City created unnecessary uncertainty around the last few days. But this will only be a good thing for the Premier League if the other four top European leagues follow suit, to be honest. If they... Because at the same time as us closing it early, it might be beneficial to the teams in the Premier League because we know the players we're coming into face. The fact that, you know, maybe teams in the Spanish League or the French League can still acquire our players is a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a downside to it all.
It's a real negative, and that's exactly what my worry is. If you've got a Sanchez, the Premier League deadline's closed. However, you know, Sanchez, PSG can come in, and who do we replace him with? We can't buy anybody. What's your thoughts, Savvy?
Yeah, I think it's a good move because the players get distracted because of the speculation. Like we see last game, Liverpool game, we saw Ox and I think Alexis whole summer that saga went on. So I think it's a good move. And I think other leagues will follow it. Then only it's going to make sense. Otherwise, there will be more speculation as you mentioned. Like if someone comes in and we can't replace him. But yeah, I think the clubs will be in stronger position too because then they can say we can't buy a replacement and we are not selling.
Yeah, that look,
could be another way.
Yeah, I'm in favour for it, but I do see the negatives in it. What about you, Tony?
You've all pretty much covered what I think about it. I think it's a good idea as long as the other leagues follow suit. The only other thing I would add is I think it's a terrible, terrible year to do it. Because being World Cup year, I've just checked. The World Cup final is July 15th. The transfer window would close on the 8th or 9th of August. Usually players have a month off in the summer minimum. So if a player gets to the World Cup final, the club will give them a month off. The transfer window closing 3 weeks after the World Cup final means the players aren't going to be back. They're still going to be on holiday. So if you're going to sign someone from that bracket that have been in the World Cup final or deep into the World Cup semi-final, third, fourth place, they're going to be in Vegas or wherever. And I mean, you can't expect them to be in shape. I mean, it's known that some players will add a sort of a stone over that holiday, towards the start of the holiday, and they'll start doing their own pre-season before they come back to get into shape. But if you're interrupting their mid-holiday, I think it's an awful year to do it for the first time. Because I've said a lot of players will be like, I'm on holiday, leave me alone. I don't want to fly to wherever to do a medical.
I'm
not even capable of doing medical. I was out last night till 5 a.m. Now you want me to do a thing?
It's going to disrupt the World Cup a little bit too, isn't it? Because they're all going to be running around looking to sign players around that time.
Well, that's the other thing. You can't. I mean, it's up to the countries, but most countries won't release players. Like they'll release them. Like this international duty. Even France said they wouldn't release players until after the game for medicals, and that was a qualifier. So you can imagine if it's a World Cup semi final and you ring in. Germany manager, France manager, ever, and saying, "Oh, we need to have a medical with whoever." They'll say, "Oh, wait till the end of the tournament because it's not," as I said, it's not one-off games like the qualifiers. It's a big unit. I think once they go away for the tournament, that'll be it. There'll be no medicals or anything. They won't be allowed out for contract talks. Their agent can obviously do it on their behalf, but I'd be very surprised if any players are allowed to leave a camp once they depart for Russia. Which will probably be a week before the tournament. And the tournament's a month. So you're losing 5 weeks of a 12-week window. And then, as I said, there's the 3 weeks there's 3 weeks after, but they're going to be away for that month. So you're then interrupting holiday. So in reality, you're looking at, instead of a 12-week window, it's more like a 3 or 4. And they're the first 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm. And can they do medicals like at the World Cup in Russia or...?
They can do. So when we signed Ozil, he never actually done a medical with us because he was on international duty and he wouldn't make it in time. So Arsenal rang Bayern Munich and asked them to do the medical for us.
Right. Okay.
So you can either fly out yourself, like as in our medical team could fly out, or they could ask the whatever national team's medical people to do it. But it's just a case of most teams won't release. They'll say no, not during a tournament. Like we're fully focused on winning the World Cup. We don't particularly care that you want to sign X such and such a player. He's our player at the moment, and that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. Look, then that may favour some clubs, But depends. It goes back to say, you got the clubs, you know, Germany and whatnot, France. If they're deep into that World Cup, they're not going to be releasing players to muck around. They want the World Cup. So
they want their players fully focused on the job. As I said, so I'd be, once they fly out to Russia, I would doubt any major country will release a player for talks once they're in Russia. I'd be very, very surprised.
Mm-hmm. And that brings me to Wenger's comments, Carl. He actually, and to me, it's not a bad idea. He said, do we need a January window?
I agree with Wenger there, to be honest. I think it's the same... idea as having the transfer window run on for the first two or three games of the season, the fact that you're disrupting a team's, the whole setup layout of the team. If you've got a main stalwart in the team like Sanchez, for example, and in January, touchwood, he doesn't go to Man City, then that's going to disrupt the team. Because let's say that he was against Man City in November and he played a blinder, and we were like, oh, we can't replace Sanchez. Mm-hmm. And then he goes in January, like, what are we supposed to do?
Mm-hmm. No, it does, mate. And it brings me to me next question with you, Savvy. Do we have a 1 week loan type window in January, or do we have no window at all?
I think if the no window at all looks good, because if you are going to scrap the window, then scrap it all together or just open it. That's my opinion.
Tony?
First of all, they won't. It's not going to be scrapped, regardless of what people say, or not in a very long time, because it's taken long enough to change this window, and that's only one league's agreed to it, not UEFA or FIFA. But my opinion, and it's probably a bit out there, is I would have an independent body, part of the FA, and you'd only be allowed to make emergency signings. I think there's got to be some case for signings to be made, because, you know what I mean, you could be struck down by masses of injuries all in the same position. Like when we signed Kim Kallstrom, I know he was injured, but we'd lost about four midfielders in the space of 3 weeks. Mm. So I think that otherwise you end up with what we don't want, with teams stockpiling players that never get to play. And then people will go, oh, but the national game's suffering. But the league would have brought that on. If you can't add during the season, you're just going to keep players who are there just in case. So I think there should be, I don't know exactly how to word it, like an FA panel who you can go to and say, look, we're in crisis, and only for a month in during what would be the January window, we say, look, we're in crisis in this position. We need to make emergency signing, and they can then allow that, but under specific terms. So it has to be a player in that position. You can't say, oh, all our keepers are injured, we're going to go and sign Alexis Sanchez.
Well, that's where I said
it. It will never happen. It would never happen, but it's what I would like to see. I think it makes sense. As I said, otherwise you just end up with teams stockpiling players. Like Chelsea have got 40 players or something out on loan. But if that rule came in where you couldn't add to your squad, they would just keep them all, and you'd end up with all these young, promising players that never play a minute of football because they're there just in case Chelsea get two or three injuries.
And that's why I say, you know, a two-week window just for players to go on loan and come to your club on loan, would that work?
I think the problem with loans is that, especially mid-season, you're only, like, Chelsea may be able to loan a championship player, but that's not, I'm not picking on Chelsea, just anyone. Arsenal might be able to get a championship player, but it's not really going to do you any favours. I think you should be allowed to use your money, because you've made that money. It's your money. I don't think they can tell you. I don't think they should be allowed to tell you how to spend your money.
Yeah.
I just think they should be allowed to, as I said, to try and make it to stop all speculation of teams. It happened to Charlton a few years ago. Scott Parker got a man in a match against Chelsea, and they signed him 3 days later. And I don't think they particularly wanted him, but it was just to stop them doing anything. This was before Chelsea were, well, most Chelsea fans knew who Chelsea were. But yeah, I think something needs to be done. I don't think anything will be. But yeah, as I said, my idea would be an emergency sort of system. They have an emergency system in the Football League for loans, but it's a lot easier to loan players in the Football League, because if you're in the Championship, if you're in the bottom, not the Championship, sorry, League Two, you've got three divisions above you that you can loan from. Whereas if you're in the Premier League and you need to loan someone, in reality, another Premier League club ain't going to loan you a player.
No.
And then suddenly you're looking at someone that isn't starting in the Championship, so they're probably League One level. And it's like, well, that ain't going to do anyone any favours.
Agents wouldn't be a fan of it either.
No, agents hate loan deals, as it is.
Well, they wouldn't be a fan of the window closing altogether in January, would they?
No, if it was up to them, they'd have it open 365.
Look, and on the loan in January, on the transfer window, the one thing I do think that it does benefit is the youth. Because you've got that squad for the whole team, for the whole season, and then, you know, if you get that injury come December or something, well, then you've got your Reece Nelsons or your youth players coming up. But, hey, you got no choice. You've got to use them. So whether it brings them on quicker or not, I don't know. It might well, I think, do I've any said, good.
Like, the problem is with it, say, like, Arsenal, Chelsea, I use Chelsea as an example, but it's a better one to use Arsenal as it's an Arsenal podcast. Like, Cohen Bramall's gone out on loan. There's like loads of youth players. I know we sold John Terrell. Stefan Mavidi's gone to Preston. There's quite a lot of youth players out on loan who never would have gone out on loan if they knew we couldn't bring players in. Mm. So then, as I said, you end up with them players that when they do get into the first team, they've never played a minute of adult professional football. They've played in the under 23s and the B's and the youths and the reserves, but they've never played a game of first team football in their life, which doesn't benefit anyone. Even Wilshere, we knew how good he was when he was 16. He still went out on loan to give him minutes, to get him used to playing football. He went to Bolton. And if the players never get their minutes, it's going to, unless the exceptional talents don't need the minutes. They can just pick up the level like duck to water. But even like, say, Dele Alli is probably the brightest young talent in the league, or one of, if we're honest. I don't like the guy, but he had minutes in League One. It wasn't a loan, he was already there, but he had professional minutes before he came to the Premier League. So I think if you kind of stop that from happening, it stops the development of a hell of a lot of players. And I don't really particularly care for national football, but it would absolutely ruin international football.
International football?
Yeah, because, Harry Kane's had minutes in the lower league on various loans from Tottenham. As I said, looking at us, Jack had a loan. Looking back, Carlos Vela, I know he didn't turn out to be amazing, but he had loans. Joel Campbell's had 4 million loans.
Mm.
A lot of young players go on loan to get their initial first team minutes. And I think you end up stockpiling a squad to just in case, then you lose out on a lot of players that would have got minutes otherwise.
Yeah, it'd definitely change the league. You know, like you'd have your City on top of the ladder, and come December they get a few injuries and they got no choice to throw the youth in, then all of a sudden they can drop back and, you know, it gives other teams a bit of a chance, I suppose. But
yeah, but on the flip side, you've got teams that have maybe only got 23 players in their squad. They get 5 injuries and suddenly they haven't got a bench, or they're playing someone than that.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Wenger also came out and he said the financial fair play rules basically should be scrapped as well because nobody's respecting them. What's your thoughts there?
I 100% agree with Wenger there, to be honest. He said that it should be enforced, and then when it was enforced, it wasn't enforced. And that doesn't make sense. So you've got teams like PSG that should surely be under that FFP radar, considering the amount of money they pay for players nowadays.
Mm.
And yet when they sign Neymar for whatever it was, 200 million, it goes unscathed. The only governing body that went after them was the La Liga.
Yeah, but 200 million on Neymar. They got who is it? Mappy on loan.
Mbappe.
Then 165 million to keep him permanent in 2018. So surely they've got to come under some financial rules. What's your thoughts on that, Sevi?
Yeah, I think clubs like Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City, I think they don't actually think anything about financial fair play. Because if you look at Manchester City, since 2008, they have spent, I think, over $1 billion. And that they don't earn that much money. And Paris Saint-Germain, as you can see, too, 200 million for Neymar and 160 odd million for Mbappe. I think they're making it a joke. And I don't know, no one actually knows what financial fair play is about. And there are no rules. And they are not taking actions against the club. So obviously it makes sense to scrap it.
We're never going to come under these financial fair rules, Tony.
Yeah, never.
it really wouldn't bother us at all what they do with the bloody things. But what's your thoughts on it, Tony?
Neither of City or PSG are breaking the financial fair play rules. That's the problem. People say, I know you're saying about the Mbappe transfer, which is why they've delayed it for a year to try and so that the fee actually goes next summer. And also, they don't look into, it's not like they bid for Neymar and they look in their current accounts. They look in the money they've brought in the next year. So it can't be investigated straight away because it's based on the year's accounts. The reason they're not breaking it, and it's a loophole, but every rule's there to be broken, is so financial fair play is you're only allowed to spend a certain percentage of your income. And Savvy, correctly in a way, said that City and PSG don't make that. But they do because their owners just, like, it's like City, the Etihad Stadium. So we probably got, say we got 100 million for the sponsorship, calling it Emirates. If he wants to spend 500 million on players, he just says, oh, yeah, we're calling it the Etihad and we're charging him 500 million. In reality, all he's doing is switching money from one bank account to the other. He's switching it from his Etihad bank account to his Man City bank account. But in terms of financial fair play, City have received that money. I mean, to exaggerate a point, it's like the PSG owner going into a shop and spending 200 million on shirts and saying, oh, look, we made 200 million. Let's go buy Neymar. They're bending the rules massively, and that's what's being looked into. It's not that they're breaking financial fair play, because they're not. The Neymar deal has been structured really weird. Qatar, who obviously own PSG, paid the deal, and he's technically an ambassador for the World Cup and he's been paid 200 million for that, and
loaned
himself to PSG. So in essence, the way they've bent the rules, PSG actually haven't spent a penny on Neymar.
It's like Neymar has paid for his transfer.
The way a buyout clause works in Spain is a club can't activate a buyout clause. Like, so say his buyout clause was 200 million. PSG can't say, here's 200 million, he's now available. In Spain, the player has to activate their own clause. So essentially, PSG give him 200 million and he goes to La Liga and says, here's 200 million, I'm now free, I'm a free man.
Yeah, right, okay. I didn't know that's how that worked, right.
It's different. I think Spain, well, from the top of my head, Spain's the only country to do that. In England, it's different. In England, you have the contract and the club has to accept a bid that gets that amount, but you deal with the club, not the player. But Spain, where a release clause in Spain, I'm not sure if they've changed it, but a couple of years ago, it was mandatory. You had to have one. Mm. Loads of clubs started just setting them at £1 billion because it had to be there.
Mm-hmm.
In Spain, it's mandatory, and that's how the system works. In England, it's not. It's a choice. It's up to the club, like when the club negotiates the contract. But you deal with the club. Like, so when we matched Vardy's release clause, we went to Leicester and said, here's 20 million, and they had to accept by the terms of their contract with Vardy.
That's 20 million for Vardy. just on that, Tony, I was reading something. France, I think that's similar too. They don't have buyout clauses or something, is it, over there?
They have, not strictly, they don't. They have various ways around it, which essentially are buyout clauses. But, yeah, by the laws of, what's their league called? League One, but whatever, their FA, I can't remember what their FA are called. But by their terms, there's no release clauses, but there is.
Okay.
Even if it's a verbal, like, same as, say, Riyad Mahrez, he had a verbal agreement with the owners of Leicester. He didn't have a clause, but his agreement was, if this amount comes in from such and such a club, then you accept. So in France, they do stuff like that. There's a few ways around it, but yeah, by the terms of the French league, they're not allowed release clauses in their contracts.
Yeah, okay. Carl, just, I've seen Pep come out and said that there was no chance Manchester City would have used Sterling as part of any deal to sign Alexis Sanchez. What's your thoughts on that? Do we actually care what he says?
I would have wanted him to be honest.
Yeah?
He should have used him, yeah. Sanchez didn't want to be here. I wanted Sterling, to be honest. I thought he could become a good player for us. He's got that sort. He's got that pacey, skillful archetype that we could have used to our advantage. I think Pep Guardiola, you know, he could have afforded to let him go. He's not really a first team starter all the time. So.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Savvy? Would you like Sterling?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Arsenal wanted him, and. But even what I think City, Pep is just changing his words. They also wanted to sell, and they are saying it because the deal didn't go through. And I would have taken Sterling because I think he's a good player, and Sanchez obviously wanted to leave. So we could have used him, and he would be a starter over here.
Tony, you had Mahrez, didn't you, pin for... who you wanted to come in, would you have taken Sterling?
I would have done. I know we shouldn't think about a business sense as fans, but purely for a business sense, you're swapping a player who doesn't want to be there and is going for free in 12 months for a player that you'll sign on a 5-year contract and has a value for at least 4 of them. Mm. So even as a bit, he's clearly not as good a player as Sanchez, but he's a lot younger. I think it would have made us able to go back to 4-2-3-1 again, because I still maintain I don't think we can do it with the players we've got, because the only player that can play on the right is Theo Walcott. So unless you're going to start him every week, and it is literally every week, look, Welbeck can go over there, but it's not his position. Like, Walcott is the only right winger we have in the entire squad. Mm. So I think if you bring in Sterling, obviously we would have lost Sanchez, but you've got other players that can play on the left. They can do a job there. Welbeck's a lot better on the left than he is on the right. We've got a few players that could stay on the left. Lacazette sometimes goes wide on the left, but none of them go right. So I think with Sterling, it would have enabled us to play a few different formations. You've got to remember, he's only 23 as well. He's got a long career ahead of him. And Arsenal are very good at getting their wide players one-on-one with fullbacks, because teams know we're not usually very good at crossing the ball. They cover the middle of the pitch and leave fullbacks kind of isolated. And Raheem Sterling's very good one-on-one. So I think it probably would have half suited him as well. His agent would have been an issue. But as Guardiola is telling the truth, Arsenal asked for it and he said no. So that's where it starts and ends, really.
That's where it stopped and ended. And I question, do we actually know Sanchez wasn't happy? I see lots of media reports. And we've seen the deadline deal type of, I don't know what happened at the end. Sanchez never, from what I understand, he never put in a transfer request like Van Dijk and others. He wasn't sitting at the airport like Mahrez, and he wasn't sitting out front of Chelsea gates like bloody Drinkwater. What did he actually want to go, or what was a lot of media speculation?
I know he wanted to go. Whether people choose to believe who have told me is a different story, but he wanted to go.
He wanted to go, okay. Okay, where are we at to? Thursday night football. Europa League, first round. Carl, what's your thoughts, mate?
Yay.
Yay. Yes. It's new
territory, could be a good experience for us. Yeah, yeah. I think it could be a good experience for us. It could also be a learning curve. If we go in on Thursday being complacent, then we're going to fail even in the group stage. We need to come at Cologne like they're going to be a very hard challenge, very difficult challenge. If we do that and we play the types of players like Wilshere and that, we keep a few experienced first team players in there combined with a few fringe players, and I think we'll get the win.
That was my next question. What's the team look like?
Definitely Wilshere. I'd like to put him next to Elneny, see how that works out.
I forgot
about. I don't know about Welbeck or Lacazette. I'd definitely play Giroud, because then we could put him on the subs bench against Chelsea, sub him off maybe 60th, 65th minute, so he's still relatively match fit. In terms of the defence, keep it the same. Maybe give a chance to Chambers in that centre back role. And
he tested Elneny in the centre back in preview in the pre-games. Does he drop him? Is that what the plan is, you think?
For those he's games? Amazing in centre back, isn't he? He's amazing in centre-back. Of course, you can sense the sarcasm.
I wasn't sure whether you're serious then. Oh, shit, is he for real or what? Yeah, okay. Look, and that's why I wonder, because he tested in there and seemed to just, I'm going to continue testing there, and as if I'm going to play him there in these cup games. So, and I hope not. Savvy, are we taking this serious?
Yeah, I think we should be taking it seriously, because there is a lot of chance that we won't be getting top four with this squad, and especially if some of the major players get injured. So I think we should be targeting Europa League and targeting the Champions League qualification through that. And I would like some rotation, because I think we have many players in the squad. Theo should start, and Giroud, he deserves to start. Iwobi, there are many players, Wilshere, Elneny, Holding, Chambers, many there, I think. And Nelson should get a chance. So, yeah, it would be good to see Europa.
What about you, Tony? What's your team look like? And are we taking the Europa League serious, mate?
I think, in general, he'll rotate, and he'll play what I would call the fringe players, who are still like good first-team players. Like, I mean, Walcott, Elneny, the lot you've all just mentioned, I think. In general, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes strong in the first game on Thursday just to get off to a good start. It wouldn't surprise me, but I think people like Jack, I think Nelson will play, I think Jack will play. As I said, Theo Mertesacker will play, Ospina will play. Chambers, I'm not sure if he'll be fit. He only started training again on Thursday, but it was just right. I mean, he wasn't with the rest of the squad. He was just trying to get his fitness back up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this Thursday may be a bit short for him to come in, but Holding will play, Mertesacker. I'm not sure he's going to play at wing-back. I think Ainsley Maitland-Niles will play at right-back, right wing-back, sorry. Left wing-back, I'm not sure, because they've both had a lot of minutes, both Kolasinac and Monreal, and we ain't got anyone else. So that'll be interesting. He could play Nelson there, potentially. I mean, I wouldn't advise it, but it's doable. Then it'll be the likes of Jack Elneny, Iwobi, Walcott, Giroud, and it should be good enough to beat a team like Köln. But, I mean, they've come in the top six in Germany, so they're no mugs. I think people, just because it's a lesser competition, think we're playing against Farmers, which is not the case. Yes, we should beat a team like Köln with the players that we've all just listed, but it's not a case of, like, when people go, oh, play the under-18s, they'll win. It's like this team have came sixth in the Bundesliga or in the top six. They're not a joke.
Mm. Well, they got pumped by 3-0, just looking at it now, and they're coming 18th. In the Bundesliga at the moment. But that's what, they're a couple of games in. They could have had a couple of bad runs too.
We were 16th until yesterday, weren't we?
That's what I mean, yeah. They could have just been like us and had a couple of bad runs. I haven't seen much of them, so
I'm not saying they're good. I've not seen really anything of them. But I'm saying a team that come in the top 10, even, in the Bundesliga, are not going to be a joke of a team. They're not going, like, people are acting like we're playing a League One side. If people are talking about it like I'm talking about the Doncaster game in the Carling Cup in a few weeks, or Carabao Cup, whatever it's called now. Mm. And any team in the Bundesliga is not going to be, I mean, obviously they're a Premier League level side at an absolute minimum. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't go to, like, no one suggested, yesterday we're playing Bournemouth, let's play our youth team and it would be good enough to win, because we're not that stupid. But suddenly, because we're in a lesser competition than we used to be in, suddenly they think everyone's a part-time footballer. And after the game, they'll come and build a wall at your house if you need them to. So, no, they're professional footballers that play in the top league in Germany, like, and done very well last year.
Yeah, and it's a comp that I'm looking forward to, Europa League. Yeah, it's uncharted territory. We've never been there before, but, look, I'm looking forward to it. Savvy, you mentioned we're not a top four team. I have to disagree. I think we've got a chance of a top four team. I may be biased that I think we're a better team than Tottenham at the moment, but that's just, you know, my opinion. What do you reckon, Carl?
I don't know if you can say we're better than Tottenham right now. My heart is saying that we are, but my head is saying that we're not. Mm. We're not in the best of forms. We can't just say that beating a lacklustre Bournemouth team is us picking up form again. I still think we've got a lot of problems. I don't know if we can say that we were better than Tottenham. Tottenham maybe are picking up form now. Now Harry Kane has finally realised he can score, because it's September, not August. But yeah, it's a long way to go before we can say that Arsenal are doing better than Tottenham at this moment in time, I think.
Yeah, I just think we're Welbeck coming. He's got some form. I think Ozil, Xhaka, Bellerin, let's just hope the form continues with him. Because as a lot of you said, he had his best game this week. I think we've got a pretty good squad. And Lacazette up front, well, he knows how to score goals, doesn't he? He's no dummy there.
Yeah.
Mane's red card. What was your thoughts, Tony?
For me, it is a very, very unfortunate, but definitely a red card. He has to go for the ball. The keeper has to go for the ball. It's just one of them things. If he pulls out of that, like I've seen it a million times at the Emirates, where, say, Walcott, just to pick on someone, has pulled out of a challenge like that, and everyone's gone ballistic, wanting him subbed off, wanting him hung, wanting him sacked. And, you've got to go for that ball. I think Mane done the right thing. It's one of them. It was a red card, but you can't really blame him. He done everything right. He done everything that he should do. It was slightly mistimed because the keeper beat him to the ball. As I said, I think it is a red. I can see sympathy. I can see a lot of sympathy, but he's kicked the guy in the chin. There's no.
You can't lift your legs up like that and expect not to get a red card. For me, it's a red every day.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I can half understand the arguments saying it's not, because he did have to go in for that challenge. But it's just one of them things where you know full well if you go in like that and don't win the ball, you're in trouble, and he didn't win the ball.
Mm. Jurgen Klopp, Carly will never come out and say, yeah, it was a red card. You could see him carrying on the sideline like a raw prawn. What was your thoughts on it, Mark?
Very, very, very much along the same lines as Tony here. Mane, he had to go in for that challenge. Very unfortunate of where he connected with Edison. But at the end of the day, you've always got to be tentative around the 50-50 challenges, especially when it's between an attacker and a goalkeeper. Because, goalkeepers with injuries, I don't know if you can say they happen a lot more frequently if they're in those sort of challenges than versus a defender, for example. But, it's definitely a red card, especially where it hit him on. Yeah, it's in that head area. And obviously, we're all about, oh, there's concussions and stuff. Maybe it's not a concussion in that sense, but even being towards that area, you've got to be going for a red card.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Savvy?
I think I agree. It was unlucky because if he gets to the ball, he touches the ball and keeper brings him down, then it's a red card for the keeper. So it's a 50-50 challenge. But yeah, because his foot was so high and it was on the face, studs up on the face. So definitely a red card. The referee had no choice. He had to give it.
For me, I watched a bit of the game up until about the 80th minute, and then I thought, oh, this is gone. By that stage, it was about 4-0. Liverpool were in the game, Tony. They were looking good until he went off, weren't they? Like, I think it was 1-0 or something when he went off, and I thought, they got a really good attack, Liverpool.
Yeah, it was 1-0. It was very open. An open game, I think, was always going to suit City better, but Liverpool definitely had their chances. Both teams were defending really high, which seems moronic when you look at the pace on both teams. I think City would have won it anyway just because of how open it was. But, yeah, they had their chances. I mean, Salah had a very good chance. He puts that in 1-1, still 11 aside, and it's a completely different game. Goals change games, but it's not like they were completely outclassed with 11 men, but I think what they did do is give a prime example of how not to play football with 10 men on the pitch. Just to use an Arsenal example, I know Everton ain't as good as City, but the last game of last season, we went down to 10 men in about the same stage of the game. Granted, we were 1-0 up, not 1-0 down, but we end up winning 2-1. Well, we won the game 3-1, but so with 10 men, we still won the game 2-1. And there's ways to play with 10 men, and I think Liverpool gave the exact example of how not to play with 10 men.
The problem with Salah, and I've watched him plenty of times following Roma as well, and he can tear down that wing and he's got the pace and speed, but his biggest problem is he just cannot finish or cross that ball. Whether Klopp takes it, teaches him that, I don't know, but it's almost like he overruns. He goes right to the he just goes that one too far before crossing, and he's.
I think he has a lot of the same problems as Walcott had when Walcott was younger, but he still has them. I think when you're moving at that speed, you're not really in control of what you're doing. You have to slow down a bit to be in full control. And I think Salah doesn't do that. I think he breaks free at full speed and he is very quick, but he doesn't take that half a second to slow down and make your decision and do what you're doing. He runs full pelt and then he hasn't got any options, because when you're running that speed, you can't change your body shape to whip the ball in or drive across it. Yeah. You've literally got so how you're standing at that time is how your body is. Like, even Henri, I know he's electric quick, but he says it himself. He always used to freeze the keeper, which means get this keeper to stop, slow them down, and he could adjust his body shape because he's taken that speed off. Whereas if he was sprinting fully through, you can't change your body shape.
Mm-hmm. And he does it a fair bit. But look, it's something that'll come out of his game. Carl, what was your game of the week, mate? What have you? There's still a couple of games on in there. What have you watched so far?
I only watched the Arsenal and the Man City game. One comment I actually want to make in general about this season is the fact that, you know, the top teams haven't really got that good defences. That's what I think. Watching obviously Liverpool, they've got a fantastic attack. They've got a reasonable midfield, but their defence is just shoddy. Alexander-Arnold, for example, looks so far out of his depth against the likes of Aguero and Jesus and players like that, and especially De Bruyne, where he sent him. But before that first goal, I think it was, where he crossed it in. But also, in terms of Man City, the way Otamendi was playing, he was kind of jeopardising the way... He was jeopardising the defence, the security of the defence. He was playing higher than the rest of the line that he was with. And I just think in general, like, the defence is... If you went into the Champions League, for example, a semi-final against Real Madrid, you'd get rinsed. Because the defence wouldn't be good enough, for example, with Man City and Liverpool.
What is it, you think? Like, why is this the problem?
It's really hard question. I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it, to be honest. It's just... It's weird. Last season, like, for example, Chelsea were known for their defence. They were rock solid at the back. But even them this season, they've been a bit, like, being a bit rocky. For example, at Burnley, the first game of the season, where they lost 3-2, where they weren't even at Burnley. I think they were at Stamford Bridge, but still, they looked very unstable at the back, and it's just a problem with all the top teams. I don't know why.
You have a look at Chelsea, the way Conte gets that team defending, and I don't know what it is either, but there's something about Italian managers and Italian football defence. I don't know what it is, or I don't know. You got lads might disagree, but for me, I watch Chelsea's defence, and it's not solid there at the moment. But I do agree with you, Liverpool, Arsenal, and I'm not sure what this all of a sudden three at the back is all about. It type of come in last season, didn't it? And it was based on Chelsea were first to do it, weren't they? Conte with the three at the back last season.
Yeah,
and then Wenger changed to three at the back in the back end of the season. And I don't know what it really allows, but they all seem to, you know, it seems to be the new thing. What's your thoughts, Savvy, on as we're recording this podcast? I just see the results of the Burnley-Crystal Palace game. Burnley gets up 1-0. Is this the end of Frank de Boer already?
Yeah, I think it could be, because Steve Parish is under pressure. And... Actually, I saw the game. Crystal Palace were very good. They had 23 chances, and I think Burnley had 2 or 3 chances. They got the goal, and Crystal Palace just couldn't finish. I think towards the end, Scott Dan missed a sitter, which he should have scored. And I think it wasn't De Boer's mistake, if you look today's game. But yeah, overall, Steve Parish is under pressure, so he needs to sack him. And yeah, I saw Stoke versus Manchester United. The point Carl was mentioning that defenses aren't solid, same I saw in that game. I think in the first three games, Manchester United looked good. But in the last game, their defense was shaky. Bailey, who is probably the best defender, I think he was in all sorts of problem. And so, yeah, and Stoke would have won that game because I think that Lukaku offside towards the end, any other ref could have given that. But, yeah, so it was also a good game to watch.
Tony, I had a conversation with a mate of mine today about teams going to Stoke, and I said, you know, Stoke's almost like a bit of a fortress. What is it about Stoke? And I said it's from what I hear, it's a cold, miserable place. What is it about Stoke, mate? Like,
it is the coldest place on earth. If hell's too hot to live in, Stoke is too cold to live in. It's very windy. Their fans are very good. They're very hostile. Like, you go to games where, people say Anfield's loud. I think the atmosphere is overrated, but it's loud. It's not hostile. Stoke, you actually feel like they hate you. And it does have it rubs off on the players and their players. And it does have an effect. It makes people rush where they wouldn't usually rush. It's quite a tight ground. The wind's horrible. They've just filled one of them in, but the corners used to be open. So the wind swirls around. It's like, and it's on top of a hill as well. Mm-hmm. So the wind comes in and can't get out. So it's freezing in there because of that, but also it makes the ball do strange things because it's like the wind's just, it's like a mini tornado. It is just a hard, horrible place to go.
Well, there you go. That's coming from somebody who actually goes there, guys. okay, so we've got a couple of questions. Have you, anyone else got anything to add on any of that? No?
No.
I've just going through our Twitter. We did ask our followers, there's a couple of questions that come up. And I think we might have touched on it already, but we'll just have a look. So, how do Arsenal approach Europa League? Well, we discussed that. Manager squad. We've pretty much covered everything, guys, haven't we? We've got Chelsea coming up after Europa League game. What's our thoughts there? Because I don't think we'll be podcasting up until the next game. So we'll cover that game now. Chelsea, lads, Tony?
I would be, if someone offered me a point now, I'd be delighted. It's a difficult place to go. We're quite fragile. Since they lost that first game, they beat Tottenham away, they beat Everton, they beat Leicester away, all hard games. When people go, oh, they're not playing well, they look at the first game. But if you look at the three since then, I don't know if there's anyone else, they're definitely the best form. Well, they've won three out of three, so they're top of the form table from the last three games. And they've been hard games. It's not like they've beat Brighton, Huddersfield or Watford or whoever, Bournemouth. They beat three of the better teams or the harder places to go. It'll be difficult. It'll be interesting to see how they start. If they're looking to play with the ball more, they'll start Fabregas. If they're looking to be a bit more negative, they'll start Bakayoko. I don't think Drinkwater will make his debut. I'll be surprised if they give him his debut in that kind of game. Looking at us, it's difficult. As I said earlier, I think Welbeck could probably start because he's what he's done in the FA Cup final and whatnot, and the Community Shield. The issue is they're both on huge pitches. Stamford Bridge is quite tight. So running the channels, although useful, is a lot harder. The passes into the channels have to be a lot more accurate when you've only got 20 yards to run into instead of 30 to 40. Yeah, that said, I would take a draw if it was offered, but right now that people might see that as negative or whatever, but being realistic, it's a very difficult place to go up. Our board's not great there. We're going to have to stay with five to match them up. You have to match them up. If you go over four in the middle or four at the back against them, they will kill you. So you're going to have to stay as we are and try and match them up. It'll be interesting. I'm not saying we haven't got a chance, but I would definitely take a point now if it was offered.
Yeah, well, what, the 2-1, they played Leicester this week, and then the week before was Everton, the week before that was Tottenham, they 2-1, they beat Everton 2-0. And then Tottenham obviously smashed Everton this week. So I think we're in with a pretty good chance on it. I agree. I'd be happy with the take the 1 point, but if we can take the three. So, look, it's a tough one. I'll be happy with a 1-1 draw, to be honest. I'll go with that. How about you, Carl?
Yeah, I would be happy with a draw, but of course I'd want to go for the win. The one thing that you've got to be careful of is Morata at the moment. The fact that Chelsea have been getting quite a bit out of him the last couple of games. And the fact that, I don't know if since then, considering we've played against him twice, I guess. I think we played against him in China and then obviously in the Community Shield.
No, he wasn't there. He wasn't at China.
Oh, was he not? Okay.
No, he wasn't there.
Okay, but, well, let's talk about the Community Shield. Obviously, we had him on lock there, but the fact that he's kind of been integrated more into the Chelsea squad now, how are we going to mark him? I think we've got to have a very regimented defence against Chelsea. Maybe a little less bombing up of the wing-backs against Chelsea. I don't know. Maybe put more of the attacking workload on the front three.
I think, I just look, and I think Morata scored in just about all their three games, has he?
No, he didn't score against Tottenham, Alonso.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Sabi, what's your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, I think we should be marking Morata, and I think I would love to see Mertesack in that game because I think Morata is very good in the air, and our best defender in the air is Mertesacker. So, yeah, it would be a difficult game, and if we win, I would be so happy because we haven't won in Stamford Bridge since ages, I think. And, yeah, we can beat them because I saw the game, the highlights of the game against Leicester. They were not that convincing. I think the Kante, the N'Golo Kante goal was Schmeichel's mistake. He could have saved it. And Slimani missed a very good chance. So it could have been a Leicester win easily. So I think we have got a good chance to beat them.
Yeah, like I said, I'm happy with a draw. Yeah, you're right. We haven't beat them at Stamford Bridge since
5-3 Van Persie hat trick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2011. Would that be right? Yeah. Right?
It was a 5-3 last time we beat them.
2011, 29th of October, 2011, 5-3. There you go. Let's go. Come on, the Arsenal. Okay, anyone else got anything to add for this week? Nope.
I think we're good to
okay.
Just don't play Ramsey and Xhaka together. That's all against Chelsea. I don't want that to happen.
100% them two will play. Unless there's an injury during the week, them two will start at Chelsea.
Oh dear.
I thought Ramsey played all right on the weekend.
Yeah, he had a great game.
Yeah. Okay, guys, thank you everybody for listening. You can follow us at clockend_talk. Our blog is clockend.blog. Subscribe to us on iTunes. There's a review thing on iTunes. Let us know how we're going. Give us suggestions. Tweet us. Message us. Do whatever you want. Thank you once again for listening. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich.